Well, thank you for being here this, or I guess mid-morning. I'm Ashley Walker. I'm from Georgia Southern University. Dr. Gavin Colquitt is also here, who helped with this project. So I wanted to first have no relationships to disclose. I do want to point out that this, what we're talking about today, is a small piece of a much larger kind of assessment that we've done that included surveys. We talked to parents, providers, etc. So, but we're going to hone in on some of the things that discussed in the interview process with the service providers specific to transitioning out of the school system into the community. Because this was a major theme that providers and, parents and all that kept bringing up, was this, the looming fear of transition. And we were interested in comparing the differences in rural and urban communities, and this was done specifically in Georgia. So we did Bullitt County, which is in southeast Georgia, and we did Fulton County, which is basically metro Atlanta and northwest Georgia. And also this needs assessment came about with just some discussions that we had with local providers in the area, people from the school system, of challenges that they were experiencing with their students. And so of course, me being in community health, first thing we got to do is a needs assessment to kind of figure out before we try to create an intervention, what do we really need to focus on. So in the literature, we know that people with disabilities are more likely to experience difficulty in access to care, be overweight or obese, have poor mental health, and receive less social and emotional support. One of the goals of Healthy People 2020 is to eliminate health disparities and reduce health inequities. So comparative, when we compare all groups, look at minority groups, etc., people living with disabilities are really suffering from the most disparate health outcomes. So they really should be a focus area from the school and from the community health perspective. We also know that young people with functional limitations have many restrictions for participation within the school and the community. And we also know that young people with intellectual disabilities and their families have less access to health-related services. And this is one of the things that we'll talk about a little bit later, was the cycle of dependence that some of these families have on the school system. But it should be noted that there are lots of services and policies out there to provide individuals with disabilities support care, health care, but the problem lies with the definition of disability. There's not a universal definition of disability, so various services and policies use different definitions and so have different eligibility criteria. So that basically means you could have one person that is living with a disability that qualifies for one service, but then when they go to apply for another, they don't qualify for it because of whatever definition that service or policy is using to define what is a disability. Okay, so schools are the only place that uses the same definition, and so it kind of creates this cycle of dependence that the school is going to provide my child all things. Okay, we also know that school-aged children in rural areas suffer from poor health outcomes. So we were interested to see if this kind of mirrors when you look at specifically individuals or adolescents living with disabilities. Was this, are we seeing the same health disparities issues specific to the individuals living with disabilities from the school age perspective, or is it the same regardless of community? So we compared it to an urban area. Again, like I said, majority of the services that are recommended for individuals living with disabilities, specifically youth, vocation, transition, medical, education, and recreation, are provided within the school system. But after graduation, these services are very limited. So that is, again, the basis of this looming fear that as they approach the age out, the 22, that age of 22, when they no longer can be in the school, that is the reason why it causes much stress for providers and for the families. So to understand a little bit about what transition is, transition plans or comprehensive transition plans are a key component of each student's individualized education program, which is something that's required by the Individuals with Disability Education Act, so IDEA. Transition services should be detailed and updated at least once per year. Now, this is required from the federal level, so I'm going to just kind of read all the things the federal government says it has to be. According to IDEA, this is what has to be in the transition plan. So we got measurable post-secondary goals based on transition assessments on the areas of job-related skills, training, education, and independent living skills. And the other requirement is that there should be a description of these services and their goals provided. So there needs to be a complete description of what is in their transition plan. The thing is, though, is that the federal government has this requirement, but they don't tell the states how to do it. So this will vary from state to state. So I've got specifically what Georgia requires. It may be different and probably is different in where your state. Okay, so in Georgia, according to Georgia Department of Education, transition plans focus on post-secondary opportunities, employment options, living opportunities, and recreation and leisure. And they are required to have in place by the ninth grade or the age of 16. So that is, they basically want to require all those things the federal government or the IDEA says they should have, but the age in which they have to have it in place through the school is the ninth grade or by the age of 16. So with that, so what we did was, of course, we did IRB approval. Everyone that participated, our service providers, did informed consent. We've got all our forms stored, our data stored as required by IRB. Our sample, we had 20 service providers in which we interviewed. 11 of them came from the urban area, 9 from the rural area. So what we did, we started off, you know, and I guess in a convenience sample, there is a parent agency that exists in the rural county, and the same agency also exists in the urban county. So we contacted that agency first. This is an agency that links parents to services. So we got a list of providers that provide direct service to youth with disabilities and their families. And we just sort of calling and asking if they'd be interested in to participate in an interview. And then if we got someone scheduled or if they declined, we would then ask them, can you refer us to someone else? So it kind of snowballed from there. And then we interviewed, we kept interviewing until we really felt we reached saturation with our interviews. So we did in-depth interviews. The interview guide was based on the National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs, the 2009-2010 survey. We adapted and created an interview guide based on those questions. All the interviews were conducted by the researchers. They lasted approximately 60 minutes. They were all face-to-face. So in the urban areas, we drove. We were all over Fulton County, Metro Atlanta, driving from place to place and talking to service providers, and the same with the rural area. And all interviews were audio recorded. The recordings were transcribed. The transcriptions were imported to a qualitative data analysis software, where in order to code, we had a primary coder that reviewed all the transcripts and coded them, and then shared it with a secondary coder. And those two coders basically communicated and discussed until 100% consensus was reached on what they agreed on the coding outline. And the coding outline was based on the research questions and major themes. And you're going to see some quotes from the emergent theme. So I'm not going to go over these, but I just wanted to show you, like, our code book. We got the term we used, the code we used, and how we defined it when we looked through our transcripts there. But, of course, like I said, this was a part of a bigger picture that we were looking at all health and support services, but we're just going to focus on the things discussed in transition. So specific to transition, what we found was that the school system is a major, the transition out of the school system is a major concern, according to both the urban and rural providers. So there was a lot of similarities that existed when it came to transition, regardless of the community. There were some differences on kind of the root cause of this fear, but the fear or the stress that transition creates was said over and over again from urban providers and rural providers. So this is an issue no matter which community. They expressed that this transition out of the school raises a lot of difficulties and distress with their clients, so they're the child and the parent or caregiver which they're working with. And we'll talk about this. This was mainly seen in the rural area, the main barrier being the cycle of dependence, and that's really kind of specific to the school system. But there were some things as far as like SSI money, Medicaid, that the cycle dependence that was a major issue with the transition from the urban standpoint. So providers identified the lack of planning for transitional issues as a very major barrier, and this falls on the parents and the school. So just they're not putting blame on just one entity. They were saying that the parents wait until the last minute, and then the schools, they felt, begin the discussion with the parents too late. As a service provider that's out there to provide these services, they feel like the school system, at least in the state of Georgia, because it's not till the ninth grade or the age of 16 when that transition plan has to be put in place, they felt that was a little too late for some of the services that take a lot of paperwork and time in order to get approved to take advantage of when they're out of the school system. And so they just felt like there needed to be some change. But they did, especially in the rural setting, they felt like the parents waited until the last minute. And that had to do with the fact that, and you can see the rural service provider says, they get so used, especially in the rural areas, that their child is in the school system starting sometimes to the age of 3. And then they can stay into the school system until the day they hit 22. And so all the school is providing all these services because the school, again, has that universal definition of what is a disability. So all these services this child needs is provided through the school. So in the rural area, the issue lies that they don't understand that when that child gets out of the school system, that not everyone, like not all services are equal, and that there's different eligibility criteria, and that you need to start advocating earlier in order to get those services and knowing the process of applying for them. But the parents, they felt the providers were saying that the parents were just, they just think the school's going to take care of it. Like, they're going to handle it, okay? So they basically say, so you have this person that's been in the school system, this family that's been dependent on the school system, and then all of a sudden they're out, they're 22, and it's just a shock, really, for these families to deal with, because specifically in the rural area, there's really not much as far as opportunities for job and respite care, et cetera. In the urban area, they talked more specifically that there's a lot of resources in the urban area, but the major barrier of accessing those resources post-transition is the cost. Like, there's a lot of camps and, day centers that provide, opportunities to have individuals with disabilities, to have a structured environment, independent living, but it's the cost that is associated with them, and a lot of them don't accept things like the insurance, or they haven't qualified for the appropriate waiver in order to get that type of care paid for. But then they also talked about this looming fear of losing their SSI. Like, if my child goes out and starts working, I'm not going to get the SSI money, and I'm going to lose possibly my Medicaid card. But that, again, is just the misinformation from the parent side of not understanding how SSI works or what's going to happen when if their kid is does have a job. Okay, so the other things is, like, from the rural area, it's just very limited. This is kind of, I took pieces from a really long quote from the service provider. So they talk about this, her son has graduated, so he hit that age of 22. He qualified for a 2-week camp, got it paid for, was really excited about that, but now he's going to come home, and what's he going to do? There's nothing for him to do. I just got a job. Am I going to have to quit my job now to take care of her son? And then the urban service providers were saying things like, because of No Child Left Behind, there's such a focus on improving academic skills that the vocational, life skills, social skills, so those soft skills are getting glazed over. There's not as much focus on that anymore. So they're missing out on a lot of health and life training. And then from the rural provider, and again, this is kind of stems from the providers talking about the parents being so dependent on the schools. Like, the parent is calling, they're having trouble with the school system, the teacher is not understanding the child's IEP, they're sending them home every day, so perhaps they're having some behavioral issues related to their disability, and the school is not understanding how to handle that. And so the school is now just sending them home versus actually trying to provide, you know, appropriate services. So there are some issues with the in the rural area specifically about the school system not really understanding that yes, they have this disability, but this can create this some of the behavioral issues they're having is associated to the disability that they have. And then also just understanding like how overwhelming the system can be, and understanding that you're going to be in the school system. But you know, the school system is they're the experts. These individuals are providing great care, but they also need to realize that they need to be talking to the parents and listening to the parents about their concerns. So I guess just, you know, to find like what we're doing from this information and what we learned. So the providers both noted that transition plans, specifically in the state of Georgia, need to start earlier. They mentioned as early as the age of the sixth grade, really, as they feel the transition talk should be starting much earlier than the ninth grade. Specifically from the rural area, they talked about transition teachers need to really do a better job of doing family buy-in and helping the families understand that, yes, they're getting all these services now, but this is not going to be the case when they get out of this system, and we can't apply for all these waivers and services for you. But there seems to be, for whatever reason, the providers talked about in the rural area specifically, kind of a distrust, if you will, from the families with children with disabilities. But in the urban area, they're a little bit better at this because they see the school system as more of an adversary than they do as a resource. Because so the urban families are constantly advocating for their child. In the rural area, they're like, well, their school's just going to take care of it. I don't need to do it. Also, just working with the schools or community programs to teach these soft skills, so that way these are being developed outside as a part of their curriculum. And then we're talking about what we're kind of doing from this is we have done some few things during the summertime, some camps, working with kids with disabilities on trying to provide them the opportunities to have kind of recreation, and this is in the rural, and this is in Bullitt County, and developing those soft skills. So again, the social skills, those interaction skills that they're going to need. I'm trying to teach them some independent living skills. We're also looking into some curriculums that are out there as a peer-led for, you know, to train parents with children with disabilities, to train other parents with kids with disabilities, to help them with their independent living skills. Because the issue that we're finding in the rural county is that really we're not the urban county. We don't have a plethora of services. There really is very little. They have to drive sometimes an hour even to get medical care. So it's very difficult for these families. So of course with our study, there's limitations. Of course, the sampling method, we had a smaller sample in the method, so those results cannot be generalized, but this study does provide a lot of really good rich descriptions of real perspectives of service providers from both rural and urban areas. And what I thought was really going into this, we just assumed that we were going to find all these major differences comparing the urban and rural communities. And we really, overall, when we looked at everything that we did from the health side, the support side, not just with transition, there's a lot more similarities that exist between these families, regardless of the context in which they live. The difference is just cost. The urban area has all this stuff, but because everything costs so much, they can't access it. The rural area, it costs too much, and they just don't have it available. So there's just that limitation. You kind of have a double whammy in the rural area, but the urban families are still experiencing these issues because of just all the policies that and the waivers and all that have to be applied for in order to pay for the services. So if you have questions about anything or you're interested in learning some more stuff, here's my contact information. At 12:30, there actually is a poster that that one of my other colleagues will be presenting that talks about the whole health and support service perspective and not just transition. So if you want to go check that out. And then, of course, my references. Thank you.